You're listening to the Fooled by the Root podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is the host of the Fooled by the Root podcast, Heidi Marble. I am so excited to share this episode with the adopted chameleon, Larae Gerald. She is a Reiki master and intuitive. She is an adoptee who is outspoken in ways that are unique and beautiful and revealing. She holds absolutely nothing back, an open book, and her vision and her mission is to not only heal herself, but to also impact the lives of other people suffering. We had so much fun too. I have to say, it wasn't all serious. We even talked about pole dancing, but don't be scared. Neither one of us. Anyway, you'll just have to wait to hear that part. It's all rated G, I promise. So anyway, I just hope you enjoy this episode as much as I did. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Pulled by the Root podcast. I am so overjoyed to have our guest, Larae, here today with us. I'm going to read her bio to you, and then we're just going to dive into a conversation about her adoption story, reunion, her amazing yoga Reiki practices. She's an intuitive. So I just feel like this conversation is going to be so beneficial for you. And I'm really excited to share it. Larae is the adopted chameleon on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. She writes on platforms to help other adoptees know they are not alone. She is also working on telling her story by writing a book. Larae is a Kundalini, I can't say that right, yoga instructor, Reiki master, and intuitive. She was born with the abilities to see, feel, and hear things that other people may not. After reunion, she discovered she had the same intuition as her family, both sides, and her adopted mother. Larae used to work as a marketing manager for Whole Foods Market. She held many classes and events on healthy eating. She loves good food, and she grew her own food as a child. She still grows food and plants. She has won awards for her work on the Whole Foods social media platforms against some of the biggest stores like Austin and Dallas. She has also worked with local processors, farmers, to help them get their message and products out. She loves good local businesses and has spent the last few years helping local businesses get their doors open. Larae wants to take what she has learned and use these tools not only to help herself from the trauma of adoption, but to help others. Oh, Larae, wow.
Hi.
What an incredible human you are. I can just tell by reading all of this. I think
you,
it's really...
You make me sound good.
Well, I'm pretty sure it's accurate based on what I've seen. So Larae, you know, not just to nosedive right into it, but I really think that you're very open about your adoption. And for those who have not heard your story, I think it would be really lovely if you could just speak your truth about being an adoptee and what it all means to you.
Well, thank you for allowing me to speak. The adoptee community is really important. It's a place where adoptees feel seen and heard. So this podcast is a tool in that. And thank you so much. When I first came out of the fog, it was scary. I everything that I had tucked way down inside all of a sudden was flooding out. So finding other voices allowed me to speak. And so basically I had to know who I was. It was a driving force. It had always been there all my life. I just, worked and kind of ignored it. Numbed it out, you know, various ways, and ignored it until I just couldn't. It was primal, and it was like breathing and life sustaining. I had to know who I was. So I had originally done a search in 1995, and the state of Tennessee, I had a closed adoption. For the people that don't know what that is, a closed adoption is I'm not allowed to know my heritage, health history, nothing. I am not allowed to know anything. And by the way, state of Maryland agreed with that last week, which was a heartbreaking blow for us adoptees that, want to know our health history and heritage. So Yeah, Maryland agreed that we don't have the same rights as people that are non-adopted. Just wow. last week. Just last week. Yeah. I mean, that's a little bit shocking. I'm going to digress just for a sec here. Because if you're adopting a child and it has something hereditary, wouldn't you want to know that as early as possible? And the fact that adoptees are four times more likely to commit suicide, wouldn't you want to know what to watch for and to be there and to be the support as early as possible? But last week they said, nope, that it's you don't have the same rights. So anyway,
not logical at all.
No, it didn't make sense. And it's heartbreaking knowing that, you know, our rights don't matter. We can get a DNA kit and find out anyway, by the way. And I was like going, okay, by law, we're not equal, but we can still find out our heritage, which is what I did. I mean, in 1995, state of Tennessee did this search. They basically just said the search had ended and they sent me a packet of non-identifying information, which I had to pay for, by the way. And in there, I did have a birth certificate and my birth mother's name was on it. So I had that. But the rest of it was just like information like who my birth father was, like his height, his weight, his religion, how old he was, but no name. And his parents' information was in there, too, as well as her parents, my grandparents. So all four of my grandparents were in there. But no names. But I finally had my mother's name. And at that time, it's not like you could go on Facebook and, you know, find these things. So searches were a lot harder way back then. And it just so happened that my cousin went to Richmond, Virginia, and happened to find my birth mother and spoke with her. And my birth mother's response was, I was told she would never get her birth certificate and I will get a restraining order if she tries to find me. I don't want my husband and children to find out. Now, her husband had died 4 or 5 years before that. So she was just keeping me from my family. Mm. And I don't know why. It's still to this day, because they all chose to ignore me. No one ever, my grandparents or her, never. And I suppressed that memory. My psyche literally snapped and I forgot about that little tidbit of information, the restraining order. And years later, I would write a letter, you know, hi, I'm just trying to see if you would talk to me. Or I found her phone number and left a couple of phone messages later on. It'd be like 10 years or 8 years or whatever apart. And I'd leave another one. And I never got a response. Well, when I did find them, it was through an obituary. She had died of breast cancer. And she had breast cancer when the original search happened. That was been such a perfect time to tell me that I had breast cancer, a potential of it in my family. And then when she went through it a second time and still didn't tell me, that broke my heart because I felt like I was betrayed as a woman and by my mother. When I met my sisters, one of them had breast cancer and she's rejecting me now. And I'm just like, all I did was be born. And this is what people don't understand about adoption, is it not only affects you once, it affects you throughout your life and the people around you, not only my friends, my husband, you know, my coworkers, you know, because some days are rough. And just new relationships with people, because there are trust issues here. You know, that my family kind of validated what I felt. So I had to pick myself up and, you know, say, you know, just because people reject you, your family. Try taking that one not personal. If you've ever read the Four Agreements, don't take it personal. Oh, yeah, I don't take anything personal. That one's a little hard to get over. You really have to work to get over that one. But, you know, that's why the Kundalini and Reiki and everything. We'll talk about that later.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Larae, this, I can't imagine that kind of pain. Like, my reunion was complicated, but to have that experience, I just, that's so devastating. I'm so incredibly sorry that you've had to go through so much. And I think you are so brave for being willing to share your vulnerability and the heartbreak, because I think so many people wash over the issues surrounding adoption. And I think the more we raise our voices and speak our truth with as much honesty and grit as possible, even though it's painful, I think it has the ability to not only change our own heart, but the hearts of others. And you know, I'm curious too, the chameleon name, how does that tie into this? Like, can we segue into that for a minute? Because I when I saw that, I thought, oh my gosh, adoptees are chameleons. You know, luckily we don't have the eyes that wrote me.
Oh, that'd be kind of fun though. That's our intuition though. The eyeballs are our intuition, because we develop it. We have to, because our caretaker that we were in utero bonded with isn't there. So we develop an intuition. And I truly believe that a lot of adoptees have a very strong intuition, or, you know, I'll just say it, we can smell bullshit a mile away.
Oh yeah. Yes.
It's like, we'll let you, you know, dig it, but we're just going to sit there and usually ask you some questions, see how deep it can go, just for our own entertainment.
I love this.
I mean, I got to entertain myself somehow. But the chameleon, when I was a kid, I loved to dress up, and Halloween was my favorite because it gave me an excuse. And then my parents just realized I liked to dress up, so they bought me costumes all the time. And I've just always carried that with me. When I was a marketing team leader at Whole Foods Market, we did events. And before Amazon took over, each store had a marketer, and we had all these events, and we taught healthy eating and, you know, had fun with it. Well, on any given day, I could have been walking around in a crab costume talking about the crab balance sale that was fresh flown in, or you know, our grass-fed beef, or, you know, I could have been a pumpkin outside for Halloween. So I incorporated that into everything and just had fun with it while I was trying to help people feel better and learn how to eat organic and local and to cut out processing. So I just always felt kind of like a chameleon. Plus, you could put me in any situation. As a matter of fact, that job taught me that. It was like 2 weeks in, and this guy was the assistant team leader, and I had to talk to him because the team leader wasn't there. So I went up and asked him a question. I kid you not, that man turned around and looked at me and he said, "I don't have to answer anything. Marketers never make it a year around here." And I just kind of stepped back and I went, "Oh, damn, was that a challenge?" Because he doesn't know me at all. And I just went, "Okay, challenge accepted." 7 years later, I was still there until Amazon restructured me.
Wow.
And I was the only marketer that lasted for a year. But I could adapt. That's part of adoption. It's adaption. You have to adapt to the pain. So I thought the chameleon was a perfect word for how I felt and what I like to do. And then again, in the adoptee groups, chameleons are kind of like a logo and a symbol. I thought I was original. I wasn't original. Mm-hmm. Adoptees have their own language, and it doesn't matter where you're from in the country or whatever, that language translates, that pain translates, and it happens at relinquishment. So that's what I'm trying to help people learn, is that wound is that break, and how we can hopefully become like kintsugi and just build ourselves back with gold and become even better and more beautiful.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I've never heard that before. Can you go a little deeper into that? Kintsugi, what?
It's when the vase, it breaks and it's shattered, and then they refill it with like a gold lacquer and it becomes a stronger, but it's a piece of beautiful art. Oh, I actually did a post just recently on that.
That's so wonderful. Oh, how beautiful. I have to go back and look at that. Yeah, I think that that's it all together. It's like, how do we take these pieces of ourselves and put them back together in a way that can contain us and hold us?
Right.
And I know that you said that you're working on a book as well. How does that play in, Larae? Like, what does writing mean to you? And what is your, you know, what can you tell us about your book? Do you have a title yet?
Well, it might be The Chameleon. That's the working title.
I like it.
Yeah. There was a couple of quotes that kind of helped with this. And as Gloria Steinem said, the truth will set you free, but first it's going to piss you off. and that's the truth. People either like your adoption story or they hate it because it doesn't play into the narrative of adoption is beautiful and that you can just take a baby and give it to somebody else. And, you know, I understand sometimes that has to happen. I'm not, you know, I understand people's need for a family. I mean, I wanted mine too. I get it. I understand that. But we also have to understand what happens in that moment when that break happens. So that's part of where I'm going with the book is the relinquishment part of it and my intuitive part of it, because I felt like I always knew my family. And then when I did meet my biological half-sisters on my mother's side, it was all real. I mean, everything that I'd felt and seen as a child was real. It wasn't an imaginary thing. It was real. It was like when those studies were done when twins had been separated at birth and they lived parallel lives. And then all of a sudden when they got together, they're like, oh, you too? Yeah, it's like that. And people don't think about adoption that way, again, because it doesn't play into the narrative of God's plan or, you know, you're lucky. Did you ever hear that? Did anyone ever tell you it was God's plan?
Oh, every day, all day long, and to be grateful and that I was saved. And, you know, it was so conflicting, Larae, because, you know, I know there's talk in the adoption community about coming out of the fog, not being the right thing to say anymore, but I like it. I mean, it makes so much sense to me, but that experience just happened for me recently, and I'm 55, like where I really understood the gravity of it. And, you know, I had put so much in my subconscious. And when it was starting to, it was like my life was retold through a different lens, and I could see all of the ways that adoption affected me that I had suppressed because I had no one to validate the experience. And the way that I see it, and I'm really new to this, is that I feel like there's separate categories. You can still be grateful for the family that loves you.
Right.
But the truth is, we have a history. We don't just arrive. Like we talked about Amazon. We're not a delivery. We have a history that comes along with us. And it's really a human rights issue to know where you come from. And I think, you know, when you talked about your mom and just being denied, just if you just isolated the health stuff, like that is so incredibly hard to understand how one human could do that to another human. And I just wonder, you know, Larae, if we could talk about that, because I think I held a lot of bitterness toward my birth mother, and she was available to me. But I can't even imagine like what it felt like once your birth mom was actually gone from this earth. I mean, how have you managed to work through that? Or are you still working through it? Like, where are you at? Are you angry? what is your experience with that?
It's a path. It truly is, because the relinquishment, it fractures your soul. It's our mind isn't in our brain. It's an energetic field. And that's what we talk about, the connection and how we can intuitively feel and know things, because everybody has this. Some people are just more sensitive to it, or some people have developed it out of necessity. or whatever it is, or DNA. We all have it. We're all connected. We're all energy beings having this human experience. And the human body is where the trauma is trapped. When we're born and that fracture happens where we're taken from our mother, like my mother, let's take my mother, for example, she knew she was going to get rid of me. So when I was in utero, I'm sure that I felt her fear and her guilt and her shame or whatever she was feeling. But I was also hearing, how are we getting rid of this child? How are we going to never let anyone know about this child? This is going to be a hidden secret for no one to ever, ever, ever know. So that is now a part of who I am that I have to work with energetically, daily, as a practice, so to survive. So, and when I came out of the fog, my brain allowed me to understand that again. So the fog to me, I think, is fine. If you want to say you're awakened, that's fine too. The terminology, it's the same. It's the same thing. People talk differently. It's the same thing. again, language. So as a child, you're stuck in that fight, flight, fear, fawn, and you have no one to tell. As in my case, I'm not sure if I was in a new home within a week or 4 weeks. Puppies have to stay with their mothers for 6 weeks. I have better records on my dog that I adopted than I do. My records were destroyed in 1995. And the same year that I was allowed to get them, ironically, and I even called the adoption agency. Well, of course, they don't have any records. I'm a human. Why would they have records on me? I mean, there's no records. So it's amazing that you can be discarded again and again and then validated by rejection and by laws still in 2021. So every day I have to pick myself up energetically, realizing that I am an energy being in this physical form and this pain is in this physical form. I have to move it out of my body and I have to remember that I am valid and I am a human and I do exist, even though I wasn't treated that way. And you can feel very grateful and angry at the same time. And angry is a normal human emotion to this. It is the normal response to this. It's not abnormal. If I was going around going, yeah, that's fine. That's what I was doing. That's what I was doing when I wasn't living my true life, when I was in the fake life, when I was living what society told me that adoption was. And that's, it's okay, because adoptees, a lot of them will sit there and go, oh, I have a great adoptive life. You know, there's nothing wrong. I'm glad. I really am. And if they ever don't feel that way, we're here for you. It's okay either way. You know, I don't want to force anybody to feel one way or another. But I used to just work and constantly go. I never stopped to think, because if I stopped to think, the pain was there. And then, you know, finally, a year and a half or so ago, when I came out of the fog, it hit hard. Oh, my gosh. I lost my mind for a while. Seriously. I mean, I guess if the doctor would have prescribed, they'd have said she's clinically insane, because I did. I went into a different reality. And then I had to come back through and figure out how to rebuild my soul as well as my physical form. And thank you, Kundalini, taught me how to breathe, and Reiki taught me about energy, and I'm doing better now. And now hopefully I can help other people. While I'm healing, I can heal others, and it's cyclical. We're all doing this together.
Oh, Lorraine, that's so beautiful. And I think you and I are on the same mission. I'm just going to use my big mouth. I'm so grateful that you're acknowledging this separation of, you know, the mind and the brain and the energy. I really believe in that. I'm really curious. Can you explain both of those modalities to people that might not be familiar, and how is it helping you, and how can it help all of us out here to apply these things? Because I think it's really hard to stay grounded in the moment, you know, and to be able to even, sometimes I even forget to actually use my lungs properly.
Mm-hmm. Most people do.
Like you're a fish just gulping
yes.
for air because you're so tense all the time.
That's right.
So help us, you know, figure out what are the benefits of this and what are these two beautiful things that you're working with?
Well, most people don't breathe properly. That's why we're anxious and nervous. Taking deep, thoughtful breaths bring you into the moment. They ground you. And people don't have time. You know, it's instant. Life is too fast. We have too many things to do. You know, you got to work 40 plus hours a week. Then you've got to take care of your family and your kids. And, you know, and there's a pandemic or whatever it is that's affecting you, whether you're an adoptee or not. And then the adoptee doesn't have those roots. You know, when the storm comes blowing through here in Oklahoma, you'll see these huge trees. One of them's uprooted. All the roots are gone. And the next one is standing straight up right next to it. Well, the roots were weak. And that's us adoptees. We didn't have that foundation, that energetically strong foundation. And anybody can get unrooted, but it's a little bit harder for the adoptee because we have to actually go through the process of not having the language as a child and then coming out of that fog and then learning that language and then re-going back to our roots and then coming out the other end another person. It's a lot of people going on in there. So
definitely.
So, you know, grounding is important. Grounding, you can do it through proper breathing, like Kundalini, which is great. Every human should learn how to breathe properly, do yoga, and do meditation. That's just something everybody can benefit from. It's been proven scientifically. You know, it's been passed down for thousands of years. Taking good, deep breaths and pauses. A four-count breath. Here's an easy one. You just breathe in for a four count. And then you hold, and then you exhale, and then you hold out four, and just do that. It's a four count. Anytime you get nervous, just do a four count. And just take a pause for a moment. It brings you back into reality, and you can go forward with a little bit more thoughtfulness before you react. And that's another thing, being an adoptee. Yeah, I'm angry. I react sometimes. So I really have to maintain that control of not reacting and just letting the feelings happen, accepting whatever it is, because there's not always great feelings in there, but you accept it. It's part of it. Let it pass through you and then react. If you still got to be angry, still be angry, but at least you've given yourself that moment. Pause.
Yes. That so beautifully stated, Larae. You know, our project is called Pulled by the Root, and just that visual and that whole idea and the way that you shape that through what you just told us. And I think that really resonates with me, thinking about the storms, because I've always felt I feel strong but fragile, if that makes any sense. Like, I know I can withstand and survive things, but it's really, really, really difficult. And you feel like, oh my gosh, I just can't take one more raindrop or lightning bolt or whatever is going to come at me. And so having a tool, even just something very simple, it's just remembering that we can take a couple of deep breaths and try to calm our nervous system, get ourselves, you know, quieted. Maybe it's those small little things that can help us manage, because I think it's the day to day that can be really difficult. And, you know, there's so many things that are triggering. I don't know how you feel, Larae, but like lately when I see pictures of family and they all look alike,
mm-hmm.
oh, like it's just, I get this weird jealousy thing and I'm thinking to myself, can you grow, be mature? You're like, why are you jealous? But I think we realize how much it, is missing. Even in reunion, I have had a really nice reunion and I have beautiful family who welcomes me, but I feel like I miss so much.
Right.
And that I'm kind of in two worlds. Like, I don't know, I don't really belong to this world and I don't belong to this world. And so I guess the trick is, how do we belong to ourselves and to each other? And I think through the adoption community, this is so new to be able to connect with everyone. And it is a sense of family that we have with each other. And I think that healing through community as well is really, really powerful. And being able to provide insights into our own healing, like what works for us, how do we cope?
Right. Yes. Yes.
And, you know, I went on a tangent there, but no, I think, you know,
that's beautiful. The
energy medicine, it is really, really significant in helping people, I think, have a better life.
I believe it's the healing path. Just like the book, The Body Keeps the Score, he talks about all the healing modalities, and he even talks about yoga and meditation, EMDR and acupuncture being the top four healing modalities for trauma people. He was talking about one of his hardest people was an adoptee. It was he only mentioned an adoptee once in the book. It's kind of odd, but he did another book.
He needs to do another one. We have plenty of content for him.
But he was like, he could take the Vietnam vet out of the war, but the adoptee, he can't. The world is here and it's scary. So that's where we have to work on breathing and energy and being whole, because reunion, like you said, all I wanted all my life was to look like someone. And then the person I looked like when I saw her, she did meet me, my sister, and then she rejected me. Luckily, my other sister didn't. And I want a relationship with her because she's so wonderful, but I'm scared of her because she's the only one that hasn't rejected me. So it's like, I'm like you, I feel like a little kid, like, oh, she's going to reject me, so I can't like her, you know, but it's valid. I mean, it's a real thing.
Well, it feels dangerous. And, I don't think we finished our idea, you know, our thought process about your mom too, about how you're healing about that. Because for me, my adoptive mom, our relationship basically dismantled when I found my birth mother. And my adopted mom is gone now. And I think it's so interesting, Larae, because I'm still trying to heal that relationship, even in her death. And I want to believe that some sort of healing can happen, even though she's not here anymore. And I wonder how you feel about that. Like, because we don't get the chance to go back and say, you hurt me, you made me angry, now I understand more. So how do you work through that kind of grief? Like, can you give us some insight into your process with that?
Well, being intuitive, I mean, basically I talked to her. It has not been an easy path. I am very angry with her. And honestly, you do. There is a connection to the other side. I mean, we don't cease to exist. Almost all religions and mythologies and philosophies in the world agree. And even science and physics agrees now that we continue on as an energetic being. So why couldn't we have a communication? I mean, isn't that what prayer is?
Yes.
So,
yes.
I mean, isn't it accepted worldwide? It's just, if you call it something different, all of a sudden it's wrong. And it's just like the story of the abandoned child in the woods. Everybody's so sad. And then when it's found, it's happy. But if you say, well, it's an adopted child in the woods, you're like, oh, well, that's just a beautiful story. It's the language switch. So it is a path, and it's a path to healing myself. Through healing myself, I can heal that bond or lack of a bond, because I don't know truly why. I'm still on that path. As a matter of fact, I'm waiting on DNA results to find out who my bio father is right now. And it's week four. So could be any time now.
Wow,
and
Larae,
it's scary because if so, that means I have another sister and I have another family. And then I'm going through this whole thing. And like you said, people think that we're acting childish, but we're living this real time. This is real time. It didn't happen 55 years ago for me. It's happening right today. I'm living this and trying to function in the world while trying to figure out my heritage, where I even, who I am, how I exist in this world and being told my rights don't apply, you know, it's real time, and dealing with depression and anxiety and the waves that come and go with it and the healing process. It's a lot. And being an intuitive, I'm in this world and that world. There's a whole lot going on here, people. It looks like I'm calm and meditating, but I've got a lot going on.
Yeah, it's kind of like a duck on the water underneath. It's like,
yeah, that exactly.
Well, you know, Lorraine, you spoke, one of the things I'm learning that is so startling to me are the statistics. You know, you have adoptees who are 4 times more likely to commit suicide. They are showing up 60% more, I think is the stat for mental health services. Often to therapists who are not, I guess the word is adoption competent. And that's not a put down to therapists. It is just not something that they're really trained to do.
Right.
And I think that further isolates us, and it doesn't show value to the pain.
Right.
And so I think we have this huge thing that we have to do. And I know you mentioned coping, and like for me, the busyness, just like you said, not having to think about the pain until you finally collapse because you've been going too hard for too long. And then it's like you just melt into a big mess and then have to build yourself back up again. And I think that is so hard on the body and the mind and the spirit. And so I think one thing I'm noticing as I'm on my healing path is that I'm not able to use the disassociation as much. I'm like, where did that superpower go?
Exactly.
I feel it's like fling up a wall and I can hide behind the wall. But as I'm becoming more aware, it's like the parts are trying to start to fit together. And it's like coming up with new ways to cope, especially when you're being assaulted by maybe comments or internal dialogue that's negative.
Right.
And it's all evidence-based. You know, we can point and say, well, this happened with my birth mother. This happened with the state law. It's very, very difficult. And I think one thing that I know personally, I want to feel some sort of hope that we can all be able to find a path to some kind of peace with this. And I just wonder what your thoughts are about that. Like, do you have hope for us?
Yes. The first thing is, you know what you know now, and now you can heal from what you can heal from what you're feeling. So that's the good news. You know, it's painful, but at least you know what's causing it. You know, you can't just keep, you know, using numbing things or masking symptoms until you actually know what it is. So the good news is once you pinpoint that pain, you can start working with it. And it becomes a daily maintenance. I mean, you really do have to do something every day. Adoptees are known to have stomach issues because, you know, that's our feeling brain is in your belly. So doing like chakra work, core ab work is really important. Dance, shake it out, just move.
I love to dance.
Yes, dance. I took pole dancing classes at 55 years old. Yes, I did.
Oh, girl, get it.
It was fun. It empowered me. No one
Absolutely.
Wanted to watch it, but I felt great.
Oh, Lorraine, I love that so much.
You've just got to do it.
Do they sell those on Amazon?
I'm buying me a pole for my house. No one's ever going to see it, but damn it, it feels good.
That's right. Oh, my gosh.
And the groups and this podcast, people, us, we have to speak our truth. That's the hope, because with our truth comes hope. Hope that maybe someday that the narrative will be our truth, the lived truth, instead of what people want it to be, the Disney story or the fairy tale. That's, you know, that's beautiful. We all want that. I wanted it too. I really, really did. I'm still going for it. But it's not reality, you know? You have to face the truth. So you just got to maintain, work that energy every day. When the pain comes, you got to know that it's real, and what you're feeling is valid. Don't, you know, let someone say, gaslight you and say, well, you know, you're 55, you should be over this by now. Well, I'm sorry that I'm feeling this right now. I wasn't allowed to say it as a child. I didn't have the language, and everybody told me to be grateful. So I did. I went along with what was going on. So I have to deal with it now because I have the language and the coping mechanisms, and that is the hope.
Oh, Lorraine, that's so beautiful. Trying not to cry again. I am crying at every podcast. I'm trying to be more professional, whatever that means. Oh.
So you cry, girl. That's getting it out. Okay. Crying is getting it out. I cry every day. Let it out. It's okay.
Yes. Freedom.
And that's another thing. The men adoptees, a lot of them weren't allowed to even cry and still aren't. And I'm like, you cry. Feel it. They're allowed to also. I mean, like I said, there's multiple layers of this.
There is, Lorraine. And, you know, as we're coming down to about 10 minutes and I want to make sure we get everything in, I want to also give you the chance to speak anything that you feel we haven't covered. But my last question for you, which is kind of a big one, is if you had the ears of birth families, adoptees and adoptive parents and helping professionals and whoever else we can think of, even society in general, what would you want those groups to know? And you can divide it up if you want, or you can just give a general statement. Like if you knew you were standing in front of everyone, what would you want to say? And I know this is a loaded question, so I'll let you take it from here.
Well, after I passed out and got back up, because I would probably pass out and have to regain my breath and everything.
Okay, so you've been revived.
I'm revived. I'm like, all right, okay, here we go. I'd say that no one can feel whole and be a secret.
Oh.
That's what I would say. And you have to know that. You have to know that. I mean, if you're going to relinquish your child, please know this, that whether your intention is the most loving intention in the world, that child, that relinquishment is a trauma that is going to be in the body of that child and in the mind. Like I said, there's things that we can do, these maintaining, these walking in nature, this meditation, this dancing, these are things we can do to help that, but that trauma is there. No matter what your intention was, the adoptive family that wants to love that baby so much and make it part of their family, they have to understand that some relationships aren't two ways. Like, I'm going to use an example. Have you ever dated somebody that was way into you, and you really liked this person because they were good people, you liked them, you got along, you were good friends, but you just didn't have that energetic connection with them but you wanted it, but it just wasn't there. Well, that's how adoptees feel sometimes, but they're stuck in that family. You can't leave and you want to love them. And then you feel guilty because you're not loving them the right way. And then you're stuck with guilt for your whole entire life. I mean, it's hard for a baby to fill a gap for a family. So it's too much pressure for that infant. And for therapists, they need to see adoption as a trauma, no matter what they think or feel. They need to listen to the adoptee as their feelings are valid, because we are overrepresented in therapy by far. And therapists, like the therapist I go to, I said, have you ever, you know, been with an adoptee? And she went, oh yeah. And I went, okay, we're going to get along great then. But it was just funny. She was like, oh yeah. Cause she was like, oh my God, I can't believe you even asked that. But I didn't know. I mean, I'm still new at this too, in a lot of ways. I mean, even though I've been out of the fog a couple years now, I'm still learning my way through this too. And that's another thing that I would say is you never know what's coming. So when that adoptee is doing great for a long period of time and maybe has another relapse, don't sit there and go, well, why aren't you over this? You know, say, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. You're feeling this again. You know, you're feeling it because your feelings are, your body remembers it as it's the exact moment, not yesterday. Mm-hmm. Your body remembers it as it's happening right now. It's in the moment. So that's what people need to remember. It's not yesterday.
No, it's a lifelong process.
Right.
It is a lifelong process of trying to heal. Lorraine, this was an amazing conversation. Is there anything else that you would like to say before we go?
Well, I just wanted to thank you, and I've enjoyed your podcast. As a matter of fact, one of my first groups was with Anne Heffron. I love her. Oh. I took a writing class by her. I still
so
get in
great.
Groups. And Jim Serrano, he actually was the one that I saw with your information. He's wonderful. He's in the group. Such a great guy. And these adoptee groups, we really do. We become like a family to one another. Like on our social media, we give each other props and we can tell when each other's having a bad day. And I know people get hurt sometimes by what they read, and I'm sorry, but we've got to get it out. You got to write hard and true about what hurts. That's what Ernest Hemingway said. So it's our healing path. And if people are truly giving you space and truly love you and truly want you to heal, they're going to give you that space and allow you that voice. So all of us have to speak up and speak our truth and be authentic. That's how we heal.
Laura, that was a perfect ending.
Thank you.
Oh.